The way of the wise art, being given by John Rawson in Victoria, Australia, Level 2, The Christ Mysteries, Module 8, The Initiation of the Earth. The colours, a core of very deep red that becomes a deep indigo blue, gradually fading into lighter blues. Welcome back to the Way of the Wise Art. We have come to a critical point in our study of the wise art, the number 8. The verse has this to say about number 8. The eighth is of earth, that the soul may give worth to the ground of our being through the eye of our seeing. This little verse is only 4 lines, and yet each line bears a powerful message. In the first place, we have moved from considering the development of the individual, culminating in the new initiation of Lazarus, to now contemplating the destiny of this world of physical existence as a whole. Secondly, we will now join the forces of the soul to the ground of our being, in other words, to the spiritual forces which create our very beingness. This, as we shall see, we can do because Christ did it for us first. Number 8 comes after number 7. This may seem like a very simple understanding. We learn this as very young children when we are being taught to count by our parents and teachers. We have seen, however, that each number represents a dimension of consciousness. One of the meanings of 7 is that it completes a cycle. A simple example of this is the diatonic scale. If we begin, for example, at middle C, then the notes of the scale based on C are C, D, E, F, G, A, B. If you do this on a piano keyboard, then you will see that these are the 7 white notes of the keyboard. Where is the 8th note of the scale? The next note, number 8, will be C, our starting note. The difference between this C and the original C is that our final C is 1 octave higher than the starting C. That is to say, it sounds like the original note, but it sounds higher. The 8th note then marks the beginning of something new. In Module 7, we focused on understanding the story of Lazarus in the Gospel of St. John. There is something special about St. John's Gospel, for it carries with it something of the infinite within its pages. Reverend Mario taught that each of the 4 Gospels corresponded to a layer of our being. The Gospel of St. Matthew to the physical, the Gospel of St. Mark to the etheric, the Gospel of St. Luke to the astral, the Gospel of St. John to the soul and spirit. The Gospel of John, then, is the tale of the work of Christ as told by the divine self. For almost 2,000 years, scholars and commentators have noticed that this gospel is intricately constructed. There are 7 I am sayings, for example. There are also seven miracles, which the Gospel calls signs. These seven signs are, number one, Jesus changes water into wine. Number two, Jesus heals the official's son. Number three, he heals the paralytic at Bethesda. Number four, feeding the 5,000. Number five, Jesus walks on water. Number six, healing a man born blind. And number seven, the raising of Lazarus. You will notice that the initiation of Lazarus is the seventh and last sign. The story of Lazarus comes in chapter 11. There are 21 chapters in the whole Gospel, so this story coming in the central chapter signifies that a whole new phase of the work of Christ is about to begin. In the first half of the Gospel, we see the power of Christ revealed. Jesus is shown as a healer, a magician, who can feed thousands of people, expel demonic forces, change water into wine, and even raise someone from the dead. This power is part of the Christ mysteries. The Gospel accounts say to us that we too may acquire something of this power. We, like Jesus, may become charismatic speakers. We may attract crowds of followers. We may become a great teacher or a great healer. The history of spirituality is filled with the stories of saints, yogis, gurus, teachers, and preachers who manifested power in some way or another. If you look for a moment at the image in the top left hand of the image page, you will see a figure that looks like an eight lying on its side. This is the lemniscate, a word that comes from the Greek phrase for being decorated with ribbons. In the late Middle Ages, it was used as a decoration to imply endlessness, and in mathematics, it is the sign for infinity. A sign which represents infinity is a symbol of spirit, for spirit is truly infinite and unbounded. The symbol shows us, however, that spirit can be thought of as comprising two parts. The first part we can call fire. The second part we can call water. Really, the two parts of the lemniscate represent ways we can understand spirit. Another way of putting this is to say that there are two paths to spiritual understanding. When we adopt the fire perspective, then we see spirit as an energetic, dynamic, creative force. This aspect of spirit impels and compels. It has given rise over the centuries to many types of spiritual practice which attempt to scale the heights of spirit, like a mountaineer attacks a summit. The fire approach is the way of the hero. If there is an enemy, we shall conquer it. If there is a wall, we shall knock it down. If there is an obstacle, it must be climbed over, crushed, or picked up and dragged away. The fire approach. In the East, the fire approach gave rise to intense focus on certain meditational practices, until some of the monks engaged in these actually damaged their physical body beyond repair. Even the Buddha had to give up the fire approach of asceticism and denial. There is a great attraction to the fire aspect of spirituality. In China, this is called by the wonderful term Qi Qi Guai Guai, which means literally making strange things happen. One of the reasons that the Greeks and Romans of the 1st and 2nd centuries found the deeds of Christ quite natural and familiar is because they had their own maker of strange things in Apollonius of Tyana. Apollonius was born about 15 AD and died about 100 AD. So he was a contemporary of Jesus of Nazareth. Like Jesus, there were reports of the miraculous concerning his birth. As an adult, he left home and went on an itinerant preaching ministry, urging people to live not for the things of this world, but for what is spiritual. He gathered a group of disciples around him who believed that what he said was divinely inspired and that he himself was divine. Apollonius was known for healing the sick, casting out evil spirits, and even raising the dead. The life of Apollonius is another example of the fire approach to spirituality. Modern fire approaches include a variety of yoga practices such as certain tantric and kundalini practices, some versions of kriya yogas where people spontaneously shout, speak in tongues, weep, cry, yell and growl like animals. In the West, we have a whole range of psychological cathartic methods such as encounter therapy, primal scream therapy, and psychodramatic methods where people are encouraged to emote loudly, scream, and project anger by hitting pillows. Charismatic Christian movements share many of these features, including group confession, speaking in tongues, and mass enthusiasm. Fire methods encourage us to put our energy outwards. They project the energies from the lower spiritual centres, especially the gonad, leiden and adrenal centres. Such practices may have quite spectacular results, but there is always associated risk. In the case of fire practices, such risks may include loss of emotional control and a variety of psychic phenomena such as telepathy, control of the minds and thoughts of other people, and sometimes moving objects with the mind and creating an attraction towards yourself from others. If you are thinking that all this sounds pretty good, that you wouldn't mind overhearing the thoughts of other people, and especially finding yourself irresistibly attracted to others, just consider how addictive such behaviour rapidly becomes. If we become addicted to heroin, for example, that will end, most probably, when we leave this life. But the person who becomes addicted to psychic energy finds that the desire for this energy recurs life after life. In my own spiritual readings, I have seen people maintain this addiction since the downfall of Atlantis, and that is a very long time ago. There is another way. This is the way Jesus embarks upon after the raising of Lazarus. After chapter 11, Jesus performs no more miracles. The crowds greet him on the entry to Jerusalem on Palm Sunday and then abandon him. Jesus is left with his 12 disciples and a few friends, mainly women. With his disciples, Jesus celebrates the feast of the Passover. Here he will share bread and wine in a ceremony we know as the Last Supper. At the heart of the ceremony is an act that is mysteriously not recorded in John's Gospel. It is, however, recorded in the three other Gospels and also by St. Paul. Paul never met Jesus in the flesh, but nevertheless he tells us this: "I received from the Lord that the Lord Jesus, on the night in which he was betrayed, took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'This is my body, which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same way also the cup after supper, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me.'" There are many ways in which we might interpret this act. But here, in the act of breaking the bread and blessing the wine, Christ, through the body of Jesus, is making an enormous statement. Bread and wine together represent the whole of the mysteries of Christ. As we have seen, the mysteries can be approached through either fire or water. Up until now, Jesus has expressed the fire aspect. That is, until he breaks the bread. For the bread, which is created through fire, represents the fire perspective. The wine, which he comes to last, is the water perspective. It is to the water approach that Jesus now moves. That is why he tells us that this understanding is the new covenant, the new connection, which will be shared in the mysteries. We have seen that the fire approach is very powerful. As individuals, we may well spend lifetimes working on these techniques, but there comes a time when we need to release power rather than to acquire it, where we release control over others rather than establish it. The Tao Te Ching puts it succinctly: to know others is intelligence. Knowing yourself is the dawn of genuine wisdom. The mastery of others requires strength. Mastering yourself is true power. The path of water is about dissolving, letting go, and surrendering. Although we use the word surrender, the path of water is not passive, for the individual needs to prepare completely, as Christ did, so that when circumstances come to the crisis point, we are fully open and available to the experience. If you direct your attention firstly to the graphic in the bottom left-hand corner of the image page, you will see another depiction of the two paths. This is a simple image. One square sits on top of another. The first square represents the fire path. The second square, which sits on top of it, the water path. Now let us look at the image in the top right-hand corner of the page. There are seven images forming a circle around a central one. If we start from 1 o'clock, the first image shows a person in a red cloak. This represents a stage on the path of fire. The next two images are also part of the fire path. The next three images show the negative aspects of this method, bringing us back to the image at the top of the picture. Here, the sage brings the positive and negative aspects of the path of fire together and dissolves them into the path of water, the image in the centre of the circle. Now, look at the image in the bottom right-hand corner of the page. This is card number 8 of the Major Arcana. It is called Strength. The path of fire is shown as the lion. The lion is the most powerful of all beasts, and yet it is gently under the control of the woman, who represents the path of water. The unity of the two paths is displayed by the lemniscate hovering above the head of the woman. The 8 spheres in the centre of the image page can be seen as 8 stepping stones on the path of water. After the raising of Lazarus, Jesus is completing his preparations to enter into the water path. In chapter 12 of John's Gospel, we find 2 indications of this. Firstly, Mary anoints his feet and then wipes his feet with her hair. The feet represent direction, so this is a cleansing and a blessing of the new direction Jesus is about to undertake. The second sign of the preparation is the objection of Judas. Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and the money given to the poor, he asks. We are told 2 pieces of information about Judas. Firstly, he was a thief. And secondly, he was responsible for the money box. Money represents energy. So Judas is a part of us which steals energy. We shall see later what this aspect is. In the Gospel of St. Luke, Jesus sends Peter and John to prepare the Passover meal. When they ask where he wants to celebrate the meal, he says, "When you have entered the city," he says to Peter and John, a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. It is this sign of the water path which defines the next stage of the mystery. The meal is to be held in an upper room, which is to say, in a higher consciousness. The preparations completed, Jesus embarks on the first stage of the path of water. St. John describes this as follows. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he came from God and was going to God, poured water into a basin and began to wash the feet of his disciples and dry them on the towel he was carrying. In this act, Jesus establishes the water path into the Christ mysteries. The first stage is that the disciple has his feet washed by the teacher. This act corresponds to the bottom sphere in the central image. You will remember from level one that we actually have a spiritual center which is found between our feet or even below the feet. This is our connection with the earth, and if we become cut off from the center, our consciousness becomes disconnected from the earth. The first step along the path of water is then to cleanse and renew this center. It is also a sign that the work of Christ will now purify and renew the whole earth. The person who is inducted into the path of water by their teacher may actually experience the washing of the feet, not as a visualization, but as a physical feeling, as though someone is actually washing their feet. This brings us to two important aspects of the water path. The first aspect is that the water path concentrates on felt sensations. The fire path, in contrast, focuses a lot on visualization. A felt sensation is not a visualization. It is an experience that is just as real as the sensation of holding a candle or an ice block in the hand. The second aspect of the water path is the relationship the teacher has to the students. On the fire path, the teacher is more inclined to act as an authority figure. Such a figure demands obedience from the student and is quick to admonish or discipline if the student gets out of line. There is a great problem with this sort of figure. Such a teacher can easily attract people who have a psychological instability. Depending on the leader, they may attract people who have deep inner guilts or people who need emotional support and sustenance. The danger for the teacher is that they may come to enjoy having a group who relies on them. Reliance leads to adoration and dependency. After a while, the teacher, even though well-meaning in the first place, may become addicted to the admiration from their group and begin exploiting their followers for power. Someone once remarked at Reverend Mario's centre that certain speakers often left the audience thinking, "Wow, that speaker is amazing." When Reverend Mario spoke, however, the difference was that his audience ended up thinking, "Wow, I am amazing." A teacher may teach both the fire path and the water path as appropriate, but the sign of a teacher who has mastered the water path is found in their ability to create independent individuals in their students. The relationship of such a teacher is described by St. John, where he tells us that Jesus, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The bond between the real spiritual teacher and the student is not one of dependency, but one of love. As the water process continues, we shall see that Jesus frees his disciples, so at the cross, only one is left, and that is the disciple whom Jesus loved. The second step on the path of water is the Last Supper. Here we see Jesus making a statement to his disciples that the way of the new mysteries is through water. There is a special meaning in the word covenant that St. Paul uses to describe the blessing of the wine. In the Old Testament, we are told that after the world was destroyed by water, God made a covenant with Noah that this would never happen again. The sign of the covenant is a rainbow. This sign is that the path of water would become available for humanity in the future. Now, in Hebrew, each letter stands for a number, so that every Hebrew word has a numerical equivalent. If we convert the letters of the Hebrew word for rainbow, keshet, into numbers, this adds up to 800. In other words, 8 signifies the path of water. Like Hebrew, the Greek words of the New Testament can also be converted to numbers. The name Jesus in Greek is Iesus. When we convert this to numbers, we get 8, 8, 8. The journey of Jesus then is to lead him and us into the new mysteries through the path of water. Let's now come back to the central image on the image page. This is the second step along the water path. You will note that the sphere which corresponds to the Last Supper is coloured red. The sphere also represents the base or gonad centre. The fire method makes much use of the energies of the centre and distributes them throughout the subtle body, through the breaking of the bread, the etheric energies. We are leaving the path of fire behind. The third step along the path of water is found in the Garden of Gethsemane. The story is told in detail in the Gospel of St. Mark. They went into a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took Peter and James and John with him and began to be very distressed and troubled. And he said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful as though it would die. Stay here and watch." Going a little further, he fell on the earth and prayed that, if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. He said, "Father, everything is possible for you. Remove this cup from me, but not as I will, but as you will." Melody sometimes pauses at the blessing of the wine in the Mass and remarks, "Everyone will partake in the bread of life, but who will drink the cup of passion?" The felt sensation that may occur at this stage to the individual on the path of water is that someone gives them a cup from which they must drink. The story goes on to tell us how Jesus returns and finds his three most senior disciples sleeping. Three times he asks them to watch for him, and three times they fail. If we simply think of the human dimension of the story, we can only imagine how let down Jesus felt that his three closest disciples could not support him in this time of need. From here on, Jesus knew he was on his own. If we embark upon the water path of the Christ mysteries, then there will come a time when everything and everyone we have relied upon will let us down, when our mind can no longer make sense of what the soul is experiencing. This may come as a sense of intense inner loneliness to us, or we may experience it as a time of despair because our soul is near death. The soul is near death because it will be reborn into spirit. This doesn't mean that we are going to physically die, but rather that the old understandings have to be completely dissolved. It is this dissolution that Jesus appeals against when he asks that this cup be removed from him. The colour of the third step is orange. It corresponds to the sacral centre. This is the centre where the etheric forces of life and vitality enter. When we leave the fire path, then the energies of spiritual command and control we have developed will no longer support us, for they too must be dissolved. At the fourth step, we find the betrayal. Immediately, just as Jesus was speaking, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a crowd with swords and spears from the high priests and scribes and elders. The betrayer had given them a sign saying, "The one I shall kiss is him. Seize him and take him away under guard." When he came, he went up to him straight away and said to him, "Teacher," and kissed him. It will be no surprise that the sign of the stage of the water path is the feeling of someone coming up and kissing you on the cheek. What is it that betrays us? It must be something very close to us, for Judas was seated next to Jesus at the Passover meal, which makes him a very close disciple. He was also trusted to look after the money, although, if you remember, he is also described as a thief. The key to this question lies in the position of this step on the path, for it corresponds to the yellow sphere, the solar plexus, the adrenal center, the center of the astral. From long experience, I would have to say that the astral will always betray us. Our longings and desires, even the highest, will turn on us and let us down. It is through the astral that consciousness arises. But the astral energies on their own will rob our higher consciousness and distort it. As these words were written, a pilot of a commercial airliner bearing 150 lives in his hands flew his aeroplane into a mountain in France because, as it appears, of a broken relationship. The emotions and the thinking that arises from the emotions will always betray us. The fire path would tackle such obstacles and negative energies by blasting them out of the system, in much the same way that Jesus expelled demons from the possessed. The water path, however, surrenders to the betrayer and in so doing dissolves the potency of this energy. At this stage of the water path, Jesus is now separated from the last of his supporters. The inner journey takes yet another turn. We come to the fifth step. Here Jesus is brought before Caiaphas, the high priest. Caiaphas represents the old spiritual thoughts and frameworks. There is a difference between religion and spirituality. The word religion comes from a Latin word which means to tie or fasten. Spirituality is related to the Latin word for breath. Breath must flow freely, or we shall die. As we progress more deeply into the Christ mysteries, we discover that we must leave behind our most cherished beliefs and opinions. At this stage, we discover that all our knowledge is irrelevant. It doesn't matter if we can name the seven spiritual centers, the seven stages of evolution of the earth, or if we can quote the Bible, Rudolf Steiner, the Buddha, or Madame Blavatsky. All our knowledge is dissolved at this point. At the fourth step on the path of water, we have arrived at the heart center. In the ancient literature of India, it was known that the divine dwelt within the heart. In the Katha Upanishad, we read, "An inch in height, enshrined in the heart, the real self dwells. Lord of the past and the future, he who knows it frets no more. In truth, this is that." The self dwelling within the heart is the seed of divinity, but it has become encrusted and covered over with our thinking and rationalizing. Reverend Mario used to tell the story of the teacher who played a simple wooden flute. After he died, his disciples thought they would honour the teacher by ennobling his favourite possession, so they plated it with gold and covered it with precious gems. It became a very valuable artefact in the eyes of the world, but there was only one problem. It never again could play a melody. Our heart centre has become like the flute, covered in concepts that we think are valuable, but which through the path of water need to be gradually dissolved away, so that the seed of our own inner divinity may be revealed and freed to grow within us. The sensation of this stage of the water path is that someone strikes you on the cheek, just as Jesus was struck by the guard before Caiaphas. At the sixth step along the path, we come to the trial before Pilate, where the high priest represents our own religious hang-ups and blockages. Pilate represents our relationship with the world. Once we embark on the spiritual path, we discover that our relationship with the world changes forever. We experience first the judgment of our family, our friends and colleagues, and then the mockery of all that we hold dear. This next step corresponds to the throat center, the center of the will. It is this stage that our will is relinquished. It is at this stage that we also feel the enormous weight of the physical body, for it is here that the Christ will carry the cross through Jerusalem, the city of peace, to Golgotha, the place of the skull. The sign of this stage is the sign of the crown of thorns, that we may feel the crown of thorns placed around our head, digging deeply into our consciousness and thinking. In earlier times, the person in search of spiritual truth had the opportunity to leave civilization behind. They might join a convent or monastery, or they might choose a solitary life. Very, very few of us have this option in this age, and this is part of evolution also. Instead, we have to learn to carry our cross in the midst of a normal social life. Part of this is the experience of the differentiation between spiritual consciousness and the consciousness of the material world. "What is truth?" Pilate demands of Jesus. How can spiritual consciousness describe reality to someone who denies it? Jesus, once the master of the word, now becomes silent. This step on the path is also the stage of relinquishing the word. The word is one of our greatest powers. Through it we can create illusion and convince others to do our will. What we dream, what we feel, will be manifested through the word. In dissolving the word, we dissolve our dreams and our creations. We have now come to the seventh step upon the path. Here in the place called Golgotha, the place of the skull, Christ is crucified. We have released our emotional attachments, our dreams and ambitions, our spiritual ideals. Now we go to the ultimate place of loneliness. The path of water has taken Christ to the place of helplessness, the place of powerlessness. And yet it is this place where even the physical body is being dissolved, that the path of water releases the greatest power of all. The Gospels record that the only disciple who accompanied Jesus to the cross was the disciple whom Jesus loved. We might well ask, why did Jesus love this particular disciple more than the others? The answer is simple. It is because this disciple loved Jesus more than the others at that stage were capable of. Together with the women at the cross, Jesus is surrounded with love, the love of the disciple for the teacher and the love of the mother for the son. When everything else is stripped away, love still abides to the end. The sensation at this stage of the water path is the feeling of the nails penetrating the hands and the feet. Sometimes this manifested as a stigmata amongst very holy people, but it may be felt as an invisible action. There are two other crucifixions that day. The Gospels tell us that they were two thieves. One is crucified on the right and the other on the left. One of the thieves jeers at Jesus, saying, "Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us." But the other thief reprimands him, saying, "Don't you fear God? For you are also in his judgment. And we justly, because we're receiving the reward of our deeds, but this man has done nothing wrong." And he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." Jesus said to him, "Truly I say to you, you will be with me this day in paradise." Here again we meet Lucifer and Ahriman. With each step along the path of water, Christ has dissolved away the influences of Lucifer and Ahriman within the human psyche, until at this point, where he appears most powerless, he has forced the negative energies to reveal themselves. The thief who jeers and mocks is Ahriman. He will continue his own work after the Christ event. The thief who asks to be with Jesus in his kingdom is Lucifer. Here we see a dramatic twist in the evolutionary saga, for Lucifer now works with Christ. As Christ puts it, Lucifer is now with him in the spiritual worlds. Perhaps you can see the scene in your mind's eye. The tortured body of Christ is failing fast. Blood from the scourging and from his hands drips slowly into the earth. His last words are, "It is finished." Even though he seems dead, one of the soldiers pushes a spear into his side and is amazed to see blood and water rush out. It is such a short time, St. John says 3 years, since Christ entered into the body at the baptism that he'd been prepared for him. It has taken these 3 years for Christ to fully enter into this body and to experience in completeness the human condition. In this time also, the power of the Godhead has been at work, transforming this human physical body. The blood that now drips into the earth is charged with the power of the Godhead. It takes this power into the earth and begins to work the slow, inevitable transformation of the water path. Christ has now experienced the ultimate loneliness of the human condition, death. We come to the eighth step of the water path. Christ is laid in the tomb. Here we shall leave him for the moment. When we experience the tomb, we have gone beyond all knowledge, beyond all normal human experience. The work of Christ is beginning in the world outside, but inside the tomb, something is happening as well. We shall resume the story of the Christ and the fullness of the Christ mysteries in Module 9. But I shall leave you with these words of St. John of the Cross, which convey something of the mystery of the tomb, the mystery of the experience of the silent, unknown Christ. I entered into unknowing. Yet when I saw myself there, without knowing where I was, I understood great things. I shall not say what I felt, for I remained in unknowing, transcending all knowledge. That perfect knowledge was of peace and holiness, held at no remove in profound solitude. It was something so secret that I was left stammering, transcending all knowledge. I look forward to being with you again in Module 9. So shall it be.